Good evening and welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is Paul Robeson, Jr. Robeson is the author of several books, including Paul Robeson, Jr. Speaks to America, The Politics of Multiculturalism. He is the son of the legendary Paul Robeson and served for more than 20 years as his father's close aide and personal representative. He recently published a powerful new book called A Black Way of Seeing, From Liberty to Freedom, published by Seven Stories Press. I'm speaking to Paul Robeson, Jr. by phone from his home in New York. Welcome to the show, Paul Robeson, Jr. Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me. It's good to be with you.
I want to begin with the introduction of your book, A Black Way of Seeing. You say, yes. I am a free black American.
Yes.
I have a distinct culture. It derives from the traditional culture of African field slaves in the South. I identify with that culture by capitalizing the B in black. Talk to us about this identification, please.
That's just a restatement of the name Negro, which we took, same ethnic group, same culture, took in the 1930s and 40s. Negro is Spanish for black, and the powers that be simply would not accept black with a capital B, so we got around it by Negro with a capital N.
Mm-hmm.
Black is simply a reassertion of what we asserted with Negro in the 1930s and 40s. Same people, same culture, same ethnic group, embodied, by the way, by Paul Robeson, probably more popularly and more well-known as a bearer of that culture than any other black figure of the 20th century.
Mm-hmm.
His spirituals, his bearing, the way he spoke, the way he looked, the way he walked, the way he talked, was black with a capital B, with Central and West African roots,
mm-hmm.
out of the South.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so we're still there. A majority of us still live in the South. And we're an ethnic group, not a racial minority. I guess, well, someday we hope that the rest of America will acknowledge that.
Mm-hmm.
We don't acknowledge that there is a thing as race except one human race. There is no such thing as different races. There's no such thing as racial distinctions because there's only one race. There are cultural distinctions and value system distinctions. We have a distinct value system different from the public American value system.
Mm-hmm.
And that's in the introduction as well.
Yeah. Your book was very fascinating. You begin chapter one on September 11th, 2001, and you said as a New Yorker for 52 years at the time of the World Trade Center attack, you say you were looking forward to Mayor Giuliani's imminent departure from the office because
right.
he divided the city's black and white population more than any other mayor in your lifetime.
Yes.
Yeah. Talk to us more about that.
Well, the way he dealt with the police force, in fact, giving them license to do what they wanted in terms of unchecked police brutality in black communities. He ignored the black community's needs and leaders and simply used, quote, I'm tough on crime as a code word for keep the blacks, more polite word than was used in private, I'm sure, in his circles, down.
Mm-hmm.
Like Reagan, who campaigned for governor. In private fundraising meetings, I'll keep the eight balls down, he said.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Reagan campaigned in Philadelphia, Mississippi. He talked about states' rights. In other words, the Republican Party has become the party of racism, reaction, and the rich.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's why 91% of us, 94% of us do vote Democrat. I mean, the country is in denial of the institutional racism, the cultural racism, which is artificial and still permeates every pore of the American body and social politic. Faint but unmistakable stench of the slave market, which everybody perfumes. So anyway, I simply state that's who I am.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, 70% of black Americans or African-Americans prefer the term black with a capital B to African-American, about the same as it's always been.
Mm-hmm. Following September 11th, of course, George Bush started his war on terror, and you say many black Americans didn't and still don't believe a word George W. Bush says.
Right.
Talk to us more about that.
Well, we are a people and a culture that thinks and speaks in metaphors, but we distinguish the metaphors from the practical reality. War on terror is a metaphor. There is no such thing as a war on terror. You don't send armies to catch terrorists, either in Afghanistan or Iraq. So the American people were placed in fear by the response to 9/11 by the government. War on terror, the Islamo-fascists are coming to get us, and invaded two countries instead of conducting an effective counter-terrorist campaign, which certainly, I would say, black people are particularly aware of terror and how to combat terror from our own experience here, among other places.
Yeah.
So we knew this was a trick bag from the beginning. Besides, Giuliani was a total non-leader in this city when 9/11 hit. He ran around doing photo ops and didn't even convene a meeting of his chiefs of police and fire chiefs to figure out what to do in a situation for which there was no book. So the fire chief sent, 300 guys running up the stairs when they should have been getting people out.
Mm-hmm.
And then their communicators didn't work, so 200 of them died in there unnecessarily. And he's the great leader?
Yeah.
I mean, it's absurd, but, we know that. Besides, the Manhattan Borough president was the first responder. That's Virginia Fields.
Mm-hmm.
She organized this stuff. The mayor was running around holding people's hands, reassuring them. And it was so, we're not super patriotic. I mean, we know the underbelly of this country. We know an imperialist war from a so-called war of choice from a non-war of choice. We knew this was about oil and control of the Middle East and all that.
Mm-hmm.
So we weren't flying any flags. But that's a different take because it's a different value system, I keep saying.
Mm-hmm.
So that means that we look at the world differently. Therefore, we draw different conclusions and feel differently about things that the conventional wisdom says are true. We don't think they are.
Mm-hmm.
We just, because we look at it differently. Well, so do a lot of other people. I mean, there are many cultures, call them subcultures, who are not recognized in this country who felt the same way we did, just weren't as explicit about it.
Mm-hmm. Now, you also say that the Bush presidency has worked against the interest of the majority of blacks in regard to economic policies.
Yes.
Talk to us more about that.
Well, we believe in Roosevelt's New Deal. A mixed economy, not a free market economy, a regulated economy, not a deregulated economy, a vibrant public sector that takes up the slack in employment that the private sector does not, a producer-side economy, not a supply-side economy. We've destroyed our manufacturing base. Besides, we're more a communitarian society than an individualistic one. We believe the collective is more important than the individual, although the individual's rights are crucial and all that. Obviously, the history of slavery and segregation and oppression were not individualistic. The opposite. I mean, we believe in individual success and all that, but not in itself. If it doesn't help the people as a whole, it's not worth much. Mm-hmm. We believe in one rise, pull the rest up. So we don't believe winning is the only thing. Or everything. You got to lose to learn how to win. And besides, if only the winners count, then half the world is nothing. So we don't buy into the prevailing, what I would call, civic or public culture.
Mm-hmm.
One nation indivisible with liberty and justice for all. We know that's a lie.
Mm-hmm.
So we say it in order not to be hassled, but we don't believe it. And so neither do a lot of people.
I think more and more people are starting not to believe that during this era. Now you criticize middle-class black leaders for failing to discuss class.
Right.
Talk to us about who do you think are the black leaders in the forefront right now?
Well, the civil rights leaders can't be leaders because there's no civil rights movement. The civil rights movement ended when the civil rights bill was signed. You can't have a movement for what you already have, can you?
Mm.
So these are leaders looking backwards with nostalgia and fighting for an enforcement of the status quo, which has benefited middle-class blacks, but not 75 percent of blacks, just like the entire economy is for the top 25% against the interests of the bottom 75%. I think all you have to do is look at the income statistics and so on.
Mm-hmm.
It's euphemistically called the income gap. So this leadership should be about economic fairness. Civil rights, you have them, you enforce the rights yourself. What I mean to say is that if there is police brutality in your neighborhood, you fix it so that the police don't do that anymore. You besiege City Hall. You vote as a block and vote out the mayor until you get a civilian review board. If you have rights, you enforce them like everybody else. You don't go begging for them. I mean, of course we should protest and all that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So social justice, when you have rights, is enforced by the group which is suffering injustice, using its rights to compel those committing the injustice to stop by the means they consider necessary. I would say this leadership is always complaining like victims instead of mobilizing the power that they have to make gains by compelling the gains to be granted, like happened in the Civil Rights Movement. The system didn't want to do that. The Civil Rights Movement made them do it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, you had a president who was sympathetic to that. If the president had been Reagan, then nothing would have happened, I don't think. But in effect, the South was coerced by the movement to yield. And the president prevented the South from snuffing out the movement by illegal violence. Mm-hmm. The Civil Rights Movement compelled the South to do that by massive nonviolent resistance. Also, at a certain level of violence, there would have been massive counter-violence. So that's one reason the government had to intervene. You'd have had a civil war down there.
Mm-hmm.
So civil rights movement's history is now encapsulated in King's dream speech. We'll read the rest of the dream speech.
Mm-hmm. Where he talks about poverty and...
Well, read what he said in Memphis, for example, or around the time of the Poor People's Campaign, the struggle of black Americans for freedom has merged with the struggle of the have-nots against the haves. That's a class struggle. Yeah, the opposed to the war. I mean, so the black middle-class leadership is all about social justice with no mention of economics when it should be about economic fairness first.
Now, do you consider yourself a leader in the black community? I know a lot of people in this community think of you as...
Well, I'm a person who has a voice that a number of people listen to in the black community. I'm part of the discussion, but I wouldn't say I was an organizational leader. I mean, I don't head an organization. I don't see myself as a political organizer. I'm a writer, a journalist, a commentator. But I try to get people to think. Perhaps a little differently about things, pose some questions to maybe focus the debate in a way I think would be more constructive, along with a lot of other people. But leaders are chosen by people in movements. I mean, there's no real mass movement yet, so there are no real leaders except people who lead specific organizations. The leaders of, say, trade unions, caucuses, or leaders of the church pastors, or leaders of organizations, fraternal and otherwise.
Mm-hmm. Now you criticize Bill Cosby for attacks on poor blacks without addressing what you call the immense social and economic problems that face blacks. Well,
yes.
Talk to us more about Bill Cosby. There's such a debate about his statements.
Well, Cosby and Poussin talk about the obvious pathology in poor black neighborhoods, which is exactly the same as in every poor neighborhood since the dawn of time.
Mm-hmm.
If people are poor, unemployed,
hopeless,
ill-housed,
hopeless,
ill-clothed,
mm-hmm,
suffer from ill health, that's what you're going to get. But my thought is the pathology of the ghetto, which is what they're talking about in the people, is talked about out of context.
Mm-hmm.
Conditions have been created for ghettos by the system, by the partisan system ever since Johnson's war on poverty, to deliberately demoralize it, disperse it, because they don't know what to do with all those poor blacks in one place. It's been a conscious policy of both parties to do that, to middle classify everything so they shrink the working class, call it all middle class, and the rest are expendable underclasses. And they're mostly black and Latino. So that you have to reverse the economic system's priorities to produce universal employment. And also, no work, no eat. Fine. Most people want to work. So everybody gets a job with a living wage, period. You produce public jobs if you don't have private ones. That's basically the Roosevelt idea and the Kennedy idea.
Now, I want to.
And then, within that context, then you can attack the social malaises. Meanwhile, he's right to criticize that, but then he doesn't talk about the other stuff. You also need to organize the people so they have some hope. So he only talks about, well, you should do right, like us middle-class people.
Yeah, so he talks about the problems, but not the solutions.
Well, he doesn't talk about the cause of the problem. That's even worse. He just says, well, be more responsible. Do bootstrap like we did. Well, there's no boots now. You can't go out and get a laborer's job or something like you used to be able to. You can't even get a shoeshine job.
Now, I want to ask you this. You must be disheartened by the man who really does have immense power, and that is Justice Clarence Thomas, who has squandered many opportunities to help the black community. What do you say to that?
He's just a house slave who identifies with the master. They've been around for 200 years. We knew that from the beginning. That's why Bush Sr. put him there. Well, what else is new? Or Condoleezza Rice. So she identifies as an Anglophile. I mean, we aren't confused by the color, the skin color. The skin color doesn't mean anything, except it makes you more oppressed. You do better if you're light-skinned in this country. Everybody knows that. So it has a result. But skin color tells you nothing about the human being, does it?
No, absolutely not, yeah.
Well, so we pay attention to that only in that the upper class, or the middle class and upper class of blacks tend to be light-skinned because those are the freedmen and the house slaves and the skilled slaves. And those are more acceptable in corporate America than dark-skinned folks. Now, obviously, you're going to do better as a receptionist if you're light-skinned black than if you're African black. I mean, everybody knows that. There's a color hierarchy in this country. Color blindness is a myth. No, that's color blindness is so black should behave like what, so people won't notice their blackness. It's the idea of let's all be colorblind. So a part of what I do in my book is that the language that has become public usage is an illusory, false language that has hidden metaphors in it, which makes it a kind of reinforce the illusion language. For instance, the subtitle is Liberty versus Freedom.
And liberties in parentheses.
In quote.
In quotes.
Yeah, because most languages have one word for freedom. There's freedom from bad things happening to you. That's one kind of freedom. There's freedom to. That's freedom to do anything that's not illegal or totally disruptive of other people's needs and life. But it's part of the same thing. Here, the two have been separated. For example, if the Declaration of Independence had said life, freedom, and the pursuit of happiness, you couldn't have had the endorsement of slavery in the Constitution, could you? You can't have the pursuit of freedom and then have slavery. No, you can't. So liberty, well, white people have wealthy white people, property owners, have liberty, that is privilege, to hold slaves. They're property. We just define them as non-people, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, the Constitution defines Native Americans as non-human, except those who pay taxes.
Yeah.
And Jefferson, by the way, said, well, they'll kill some of us. We got to kill them all. Jefferson. So we distinguish between Jefferson and Lincoln. Jefferson is the father of a moderate Confederacy, and Lincoln's the father of the Union. Jefferson's a slave owner, and Lincoln is for the abolition of slavery. So we go to the Lincoln Memorial, not the Jefferson Memorial. Mm-hmm. Although the idea of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness and the thrust of the Declaration of Independence is a great document, if you mean it. So we see the contradictions here. So the original Constitution was not our Constitution. It took all those amendments. And when it says the general welfare, it doesn't mean the corporate welfare, but that's what's snuck in there.
Mm.
And when it says a more perfect union, it doesn't mean any compromise with any kind of confederacy, yet we have neoconservatives who are really neo-confederates today, with states' rights and all.
Mm-hmm.
So the blue states are symbolic of the Union, all right, but the red states should be gray states because they're symbolic of the Confederacy. Besides, the metaphor is false because red is the political color of communists and socialists, isn't it?
Mm.
So it's a deliberately false metaphor. When you look at the red states all over the South, this is the Confederate state.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm saying is that the language, when we speak the language, we know it's a language of false metaphors.
Mm-hmm. And deception. Mm-hmm.
And now, some middle-class folks and elite folks have been assimilated and believe all that. We don't.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And there is a class difference, always has been, within black life that's glossed over because of the so-called, quote, color or race issue. But we're basically, the majority of us, we're a working class people with a working class culture, not a middle class people with a middle class entrepreneurial culture, the majority of us.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I emphasize the field slave part. So it's a subtle difference in the 21st century, but it reflects in a different value system, social, political, and spiritual.
Mm-hmm. Now, before we run out of time, you state that your collective and life experience has taught you that black people need to have progressive candidates in order to support your interests. Now, what do you think about Barack Obama's chances? Or are you a supporter of his?
Definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you see, let me speak for myself. Every political system has a left, right, and center. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
A country is either center right or center left these days. There is no such thing as center.
Mm.
That's an illusion. This country is really right center right now, the government. But the majority of the country wants to go center left. Not left center, but center left. Now, on the spectrum, you look at the Democratic Party. The Clintons are the center right.
Mm-hmm.
Obama is left center. Edwards is left center. But they have to campaign as center-left because the left, including former liberals, has been outlawed as some kind of crazy. So liberals are now progressives.
I see what you mean, yeah.
They can't be. In other words, liberals have been labeled leftists, okay? So liberals are a bad word. Progressive is really to the left of liberals,
mm-hmm.
but it sounds less left today than liberal does. It's not discredited.
Exactly.
The average voter doesn't know this, but Barack Obama represents the left center of the Democratic Party.
Mm-hmm. And you know what, Paul? We're almost out of time. Do you think he has a chance to win?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. Well, look at the polls.
Absolutely, yeah. I agree with you.
And look at his momentum.
Mm-hmm.
Look at his change. It's about you, not me. The system is broken. It's there to keep people in power.
Mm-hmm.
And when I get in, I want to change the system, not make it work for you. Well, it's a big gamble, but I think it's working because people know the system's broken. So we'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see. But I think it's changed because he happens to be a black and at the same time ecumenical or universal or, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He's a different metaphor. He is, just by being, a challenge to the system.
Mm-hmm. And on that note, Paul Robeson Jr., we have run out of time. I want to thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me.
And I do hope people will read his book. It's called A Black Way of Seeing.
Read the appendix. It's the proof that two elections were stolen, and nobody talks about that.
Yeah, we've had guests on talking about that, indeed.
Okay.
Yes. Thank you so much, and good luck to you in the future. Thank you.
Thanks so much for having me.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. We are supported in part by the Arts of the Southern Finger Lakes in Corning, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. We'll be back next week. I'm Tish Perlman.